Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Bucs place rookie Keyshawn Vaughn on the reserve COVID list and a war of words with Mike Evans and two players about the NFL's top 100. And the Rays bash the Braves 14-5 as Hunter Renfroe hits two home runs. We've got all this and your MavBag questions answered 100% correctly on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get to your questions, and of course, we got some recapping of the Rays win over the Braves. Some news kind of came down, I think, late in the afternoon on Monday, right around the transactions time, about 4 o'clock or so. The Bucs had their first rookie placed on the reserve COVID list. It's Keyshawn Vaughn, the running back they drafted in the third round from Vanderbilt. Now, teams are, by agreement, not allowed to say whether this player tested positive for COVID or if they were just in contact with somebody who had the virus, in which case, you know, they would be quarantined. But in any case, he's a key piece of what they wanted to do, obviously, in 2020. And, you know, rookies are behind the eight ball to begin with because there was no off season. It was all virtual training. You know, they didn't get a chance to really be integrated in the offense. They're not going to have any preseason. So a lot of those things are working against them this year anyway. And then now you have a guy that's, you know, going to have to stay out at least until he quarantines himself or proves that he is healthy with a couple of negative tests for COVID. So unfortunate for Keyshawn Vaughn. The veterans will start taking their tests starting today on as they start to report to training camp. They'll be tested today and then 2 days later after that. And if they pass those two, then they'll be, you know, able to get a physical. And then August 1st, they can start coming in the building. Along those lines, Tom Brady, of course, reported with the rookies, and he was in the building, as a matter of fact, on Monday, which means that he is, you know, TB12 has those immunities that he was talking about with the TB12 pills, and he's good to go and ready to roll on here.
Well, see, I guess the Bucs should have taken J.K. Dobbins, see?
Yeah, well, if they had done that, though, although they like Jake, they actually like Vaughn better and got him in the third round, but J.K., was on the board, as you know, for them. And I had them taking him at that time, and that's when they went for Antoine Winfield, which was a little bit of a surprise, but a good value pick for them because they needed a safety. But, yeah, apparently J.K. didn't have any trouble. It's unfortunate. I mean, you know, you're going to have a lot of guys test.
Sure. Well, and you don't know. He may have just come in contact with someone who's got it. Mm-hmm. So he's just, you know, it's being precautious. It's not necessarily he has it or there's any issues, just, you know, that's just kind of the world we live in today. So,
sure.
I mean, this is not the Miami Marlins, so.
Yeah, how about that story? We didn't even mention that in the open. We should talk about it now because as we start talking about football players, and there was a number of them that got put on the reserve list on Monday around the league, but the Miami Marlins had to cancel the game, and so did the Philadelphia Phillies, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, 11
players 11? And two staffers, I believe.
Yeah.
Have tested positive an outbreak on the team. So they, but ESPN, I believe, reported one of the players was tested positive in Atlanta before they even went to Philly.
Right.
That's not good. That's not a good look. And, you know, you're less than a week into baseball, and you've got a team that the Marlins and Orioles game was postponed on Monday night, most likely be postponed on Tuesday.
Phillies-Yankees
was postponed because it was supposed to be played in the same park where the Yankees would have been in that same clubhouse as the Marlins were just in. So,
right.
You know, it's a 60-game sprint in 67 days, and you start postponing games this early in, that's not a good look.
Yeah, and as far as you start thinking about makeups or doubleheaders or things like that, I think what it's going to come down to, and this could happen with a number of teams. I mean, we don't know. I mean, there was really sort of a catch your breath moment, I think, in sports in general. Kyle Brandt, who I love on the NFL Network, there was a lot of people that covered the NFL that were saying, yeah, what do you think it's going to be like when the NFL gets together And, you know, those guys with the contact they have in practice alone, let alone travel and playing games. And Kyle Brandt was like, it almost is like people that cover the NFL are rooting for the league to not play this year. And it's like, no, nothing's farther from the truth. You can both want the league to play and be very skeptical and worried about people's safety. And this is the thing. Like, no one's ever attempted this before, right? You've got the NBA in a bubble. The NHL, I guess, when they all got their tests going into the bubble, no one tested positive in the NHL,
so,
is that right?
Yeah, over the last 8 days, they gave over 4,200 tests to more than 800 players, zero positive tests.
That's impressive.
So during the two-week period of Phase 3, two positive tests occurred, and that was both in the first week among over 6,800 tests.
That's impressive. And I think what it's going to come down to in all these sports, and I think it might be in some ways better or easier to contain within the bubble once people get there. But even then, you know, you have to, it's going to be the teams that take care of each other. It's going to be the ones that do the right things all the time. That, you know, and even the NFL, when their protocols are in their rules adopted by the NFLPA, there's a list of things that if they feel or suspect or can prove that you did, you're going to forfeit a good amount of your salary. You're not going to get paid on the COVID list because if you, you know, go into a bar or a restaurant, you know, if you go to a party with or a place with more than 10 people, there's a lot of things, you know, share, take ride sharing, all that sort of thing, that if you do any of those things and it's responsible for you getting COVID or you test positive as a result of that, you're going to forfeit a lot of money.
That
and
include getting wings from a gentleman's club?
Yes, it would. Who is that? Was that the NBA?
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name, but that's his favorite wings in the whole world, he said.
Yeah, because it just, you know, I always go to my strip clubs for wings, man. They got the best wings. You just can't imagine. You can't be going there. So there was a lot of angst, I think, about the NFL when that happened with the Miami Marlins. And look, I mean, it's likely to occur on a bunch of teams. And if it doesn't occur with entire teams and you're going to have a bunch of star players, it's possible that, you know, a few of those might be knocked out for a while. So, again, I think the teams that really commit themselves, and it's hard to do, but you're talking about 2+ months. You're not talking about a whole season. And if you do that and protect your families as well, they're going to be the ones that emerge, you know, the most victorious, I suppose. But it's tough, you know. It's not anybody's fault. I mean, sometimes, you know, these guys are going home, and when they do, and I worry about, you know, kids going to school and coming home and maybe being asymptomatic, and you know, there's any number of ways that this virus can be spread. So you do the best you can with it, and so far, okay with this, other than Austin Meadows is still out, which is another thing that when Austin Meadows comes back, this ball club is going to be pretty good. But before we get to the Rays here, there was a war of words with Mike Evans and two players on the NFL's top 100 list. And this kind of started because Evans was interviewed about Marshawn Lattimore, the New Orleans Saints corner, who appeared, I think he was number 77 or 76, somewhere in there, on this list, and he was interviewed, and of course they've gone back and forth now for a number of years. You remember a couple years ago when Jameis Winston was knocked out of a game there, it was Lattimore that Evans sort of blindsided, and he ended up getting a one-game suspension for that in a loss down there. Lattimore's a good player, but Evans has had pretty big games against him as well. I think a couple years ago he had 147 yards and a touchdown. It's gone back and forth, but when he was first asked about him on NFL Network, was basically like, hey, you know, Marshawn Lattimore held, you know, shut you down last year in New Orleans to no catches. He goes, whoa, 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 what? He was like, whoa, 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 whoa. He goes, you mean the New Orleans Saints had a good game against me? And so he didn't want to really give it all to Lattimore. And then he came back and, you know, he sort of acknowledged, he goes, look, I'm not saying he's not a good player. He's a really good player. He makes good plays on the ball. He can tackle. Most corners don't tackle. He's very physical. So he gave him his due. But you can tell, I mean, the bad blood between the Saints and the Bucks is real. It really is. And it just keeps layers upon layers upon layers. And Cameron Jordan weighed in, and they said, yeah, well, Evan said that, you know, it was a D because he was, what, frustrated? Yeah. Well, he should be, you know, because that's the way my guy does to a lot of good receivers. And again, Lattimore, good player. But when they play the Saints, if you watch, Lattimore will take Evans. He'll take the best receiver, and he'll follow him around the field. But they do give a lot of respect to Mike Evans over the top. I mean, Chris Godwin has torn him up because they keep a safety many times to keep Evans from taking the top of off the defense, which he has done to Lattimore a couple times in his career. And so I think that's what Mike meant, was that, look, they rotate to me. They're aware of where I'm at, and they're not going to let me, you know, take them apart. So there's a big focus on trying to stop him first. And so that's kind of what he meant. And then the Chargers receiver, Keenan Allen, who was number 77 in the top 100, he got irritated about that because he knows the receivers that are coming, you know, with better rankings than him. Like the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, he called out Chris Godwin. And his tweet just kind of came out of nowhere, says, okay, I'm tired of biting my tongue. And he mentioned those three players, and he said, and the list goes on, they are not better than a better receiver than me, faster than me every day of the week, but separation, child, please. And then he said, you know, it just feels like he's a better route runner. Evans did not take well to that. First of all, he said, you tagged the wrong guy, the wrong Chris Godwin. He goes, and don't be mad at us. We ain't make the ratings or care about them. I like the confidence, but be realistic. You're not at my level, bro. So this has got, you know, it's funny because Mike is right. They don't do the rankings, okay? And so it's, I think between the NFL 100 and Madden rankings makes these guys crazy. I've seen guys get, you know, more upset about Madden ratings than anything they've done or not done in games before. So it's kind of unusual to watch him go back and forth. There's no denying Mike Evans is a great player, and I don't know where he's going to be ranked. I know Chris Godwin will be in this mix as well. If you want to talk about underrated, how about Lavonte David coming in at 100? I mean, that's just reprehensible. If that guy's the 100th best player.
We got a mailbag question on that tonight, so I'll go ahead and ask that. It says,
okay,
from Joe, it says, hey, Rick, do you honestly believe that Lavonte David's peers think there are 99 players better than him? I think it's hilarious.
I think it's, yeah, I first of all, I don't know how they arrive at that. If that's a vote by players, maybe they're asking the wrong guys, but it's a couple things. And this is not the first time that Lavonte David has been disrespected in this manner, because clearly he's in the top 50 players in the NFL. I mean, I might have a hard time eliminating some of the ones to get him there. But I will say this, that, you know, playing for Tampa Bay, a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 11 years, a team that's rarely on national TV, one of the things that Tom Brady is going to do is bring that spotlight here on all these guys. Now, you know, Lavonte is not the Lavonte of 25 and 26 years old. He's in his 30s now. So, you know, not that he slowed down last year. He had an exceptional year, and he's still, you know, a very, very spry and young 30-year-old. However, you know, he should have been to about 5 or 6 Pro Bowls by now. And some of that is the way the structure of the voting is, that if you're a 3-4 stand-up outside linebacker where you would normally be considered a pass rusher or a defensive end in any other defense, like a Shaq Barrett, okay, you are competing with a guy like Lavonte David for a starting outside linebacker spot, and that's just not the same position. I'm sorry. You know, nobody asked Jason Pierre-Paul in this defense to drop into coverage, you know. So those guys should be considered like just, you know, edge rushers or defensive ends, but they're not. They're considered outside linebackers. So people look at the sack numbers, and that's why he gets ignored, and he shouldn't, because he's one of the best will linebackers in the game, and I think it's unfortunate. The reason, in addition to the fact that the Bucs don't win, is that he's an understated guy. He's not a big talker. He's a guy that leads by example. When he does speak, you know, the economy of words matter, because, you know, he's been around a long time, but he's never played in a single playoff game. And that's a shame for a guy that's gone through his entire career. He'll be in the Ring of Honor. His numbers, by the way, rival guys like Patrick Willis, who I think is a Hall of Fame candidate, guys like Luke Kuechly, easily, who just retired and is also considered somebody who could be a future Hall of Famer. And Lavonte David had done all those things. And so, you know, for him to come in at 100, I mean, the only more disrespect you could give him is not have him, you know, have him 101. not have him in there at all. And there are linebackers in this list that are going to come ahead of him that have not even played full seasons. And I just don't understand that. But that's where he is. And, you know, if anyone has to complain, he would do it. But he's not the complaining type. He's never, you're never going to hear boo from him because he knows how good he is. And I think his peers know it, whether they vote for this or not. But no, to answer the mailbag question, hell no. He's much better than 100, and it's a shame that you know, when the list comes out, he's the first name mentioned because he shouldn't have been. But you know, again, you can settle all that this year on the field, and I think with the 5 national TV games, if Lavonte David comes ready to play, which he always does, and he has some luck with injuries, even though, you know, as you get older, you don't get healthier normally, I think this will be a great opportunity for the nation to see just how exceptional he's been. So, good question there. I'm glad it was brought up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So now on to the Rays, and congratulations to them. They have won now 3 games in a row. This time the bats finally came alive, 14-5. All of their home runs that they hit, I mean, it was impressive. Hunter Renfro with 2 of them, including his first hit of the year, and then 2 home runs. Also got a absolute bomb from Jose Martinez late in the game. Mike Zunino homered. I mean, so it was an impressive display of power. And, you know, they got okay pitching. I mean, Tyler Glasnow was burning through his pitches the first 2 innings, and he had a quick third. He winds up going 4 innings, but he strikes out 9. So his stuff was swing and miss stuff, as you would expect with Tyler, but not exactly pounding the strike zone or you know, putting guys away like he needs to if he's going to go deep into games.
Yeah, you want that pitch efficient. I mean, he had the 1 inning of, what, 8 pitches, but then after that, it was 64 pitches for 3 innings. That's that's not what you want from a starter. You'd like to go, you know, a little deeper in the game through 70-some pitches. So.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, maybe part of the problem is that the Braves starter didn't have his normal velocity, and now they've, what, sent him down?
Yeah, Mike Fultonavich was designated for assignment, we're getting as we're recording this, so... he was an all-star back in 2018 where he averaged 95 miles an hour on his fastball. Yeah. Or last year was 95. He was 96.5 during his 18 all-star season. He was averaging 89.3 tonight, topping out at just under 93 miles an hour. So a little concern there, and they're designating him for assignment.
Well, it's going to, you know, pitching is going to be so key. And even though, you know, some of the Braves starters have not gone very deep. I mean, we saw Snell the other day just get out of 2 innings. Of course, Charlie Morton had a bad opener day of the season. How about the Rays bullpen? I mean, we knew this coming in that they have just a number of guys with different styles, and all of it is wicked stuff. I mean, they can all, you know, for the most part, a lot of guys are really hard throwers. You've seen Alvarado, you've seen, you know, Castillo tonight. I mean, you know, they're so deep down there, and they can mix and match. And really, Jalen Beeks was unfortunate for him, because he, you know, should have had a cleaner inning. You know, the first guy gets on a strike 3, what they called a wild pitch, could have been a pass ball, then an error by Adames, and then, you know, then the walls fell in. He ends up giving up, I think, you know, 4 or 5 runs, but
yep, 4.
But really, the pitching has carried the Rays to their 3 straight wins. Obviously, they pulled one out somehow with 2 out and nobody on, trailing 4-2 in the final game against Toronto that they won in extra innings. And that's going to prove to be, I think, Steve, a pivotal game in a short season. You know, they lose that game, you know, who knows? But you get a walk-off win there, and then the Braves come to town, and the bats wake up a little bit. And all of a sudden, you're 3-1.
Yeah, and with the Yankees and Orioles games both postponed on Monday, you're in first place. So if baseball shuts down today because of COVID, then you know, I think the Rays are champs. Isn't that the way it works?
You're flying the banner, man. They're buying the rings, and it goes on a license plate, too. I think they did that for Central Florida. They should do it for...
The Orlando Apollos did the same thing, so...
Well, coached by Steve Spurrier. Man, I think the Rays ought to be American League champs. I mean, put it down. They're World Series champs. Had the best year of anybody. So, yeah, we'll see if that comes to pass. People are a little afraid. Are you worried about baseball? Are you worried that this might be a thing where there'll be several teams that'll have to postpone games, and then those teams they played will have to postpone games, and before you know it, you only have 60 you can play. How do you manage this?
I am worried, and you know, especially if, okay, so the Marlins we know have an outbreak, but if it does, if the Phillies end up getting it from them,
right,
you know, if it's just a team or two and it's pretty much contained to a team or two, you may get some forfeits, you may get some, you know, which is unfortunate when you're trying to play a 60 game schedule. Although with expanded playoffs, I mean, almost every team gets in anyway.
Everybody's
gonna
make it, yeah.
You know, so I worry a little about that, but I mean, you know, I mean, the other part of this is, look, it's the Marlins and Orioles game that got postponed. I mean, you know, you can already eliminate both of them from the playoffs, so
that's true.
It doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean, I'm worried. I don't look, at the end of the day, it's going to matter. You have to be able to trust your teammates and count on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and football is going to be the same thing without a bubble. I mean, the NBA and MLS and hockey are in bubbles now, and so once you get in that bubble, assuming that you can trust everyone to stay in it and do the right thing, it should be pretty easy to avoid any, you know, mass problems in this regard. Baseball and football, where you go home at the end of the night, you're traveling, you're in different hotels and in and out of planes, and now granted you're on charters, but you know, all this stuff that you're not sanitized, for lack of a better word, in a bubble where they're controlling, you know, I mean, the hockey players are, you know, for the first week or two, you're not even supposed to socialize with the other teams, even though you're in the same hotels and stuff. It's, you know, they're trying to keep everybody isolated till you know that you've got through that 10 or 14 day period where everybody's safe, and then, you know, then they loosen things up a little bit, and you know, just in the bubble itself. So I mean, I mean just with the outbreaks and stuff, you do worry about it's but you have to rely on your teammates and the players and the coaches and the staff and all that to do the right things, not just at the ballpark but when you're away from it.
Yeah, and the difficult thing is that, like, they have a bubble for those other leagues, but in this case it's sort of a ecosystem, if you will. I mean, basically you have to hope or get a little lucky. I mean, if you've got a family, they can't go see anybody, they can't invite people into the home, and you got to hope that if your kids go to school they don't come back asymptomatic or otherwise and give it to you. I mean, what you know, how do you control your interaction with them and what they're doing? They have to buy in as well. So it's a total commitment, and you know,
and to
baseball
be fair,
plays a lot of games.
And to be fair, baseball and football, the bubble really didn't make sense for them. I mean, you know, when it comes to, okay, it's two plus months, and in football, 3 or 4 months of being away from your family, every player. I mean,
4 months,
you know, basketball and hockey and, you know, MLS is doing this tournament. It's just a kind of a preseason, you know, a tournament, in-season tournament. But hockey and basketball, after 2 weeks in, you know, like 8 teams are going home. And then another 2 weeks in, 4 more are going home. And,
that's right.
You know, it's only a handful of teams that are going to be there that long period of time. You're not talking the whole league. You're not talking a majority of the league. It's, you know, I mean, there's 24 teams for the you know, hockey and 22 for the NBA. But in 2 to 3 weeks, it's almost half that. And then, you know, like I said, and then it goes down from there. So, you know, the bubble system and being away makes it a little easier because you're not dealing with every player having to deal with that. It's, you know, only the teams that keep advancing are going to have the long time where they're away. And I know the NHL, once you get to the conference finals, they're allowing your families to come in too. So at that point, because they'll have more hotel rooms and be able to accommodate more people in the bubble because there's less teams. So you're not dealing with 52 players from 24 teams. You're talking 4 teams at that point. So go ahead and bring the families in and that, and they'll have to test and quarantine and all that. But, you know, so it works. Baseball and football don't really have that option realistically with families and all that because of the length of time and the fact that every team's got to be there the whole time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've heard the commissioner talk about playing the season in its entirety or playing the whole season or something, that words to that effect. I think now what they're talking about is completion. In other words, they I think they fully expect, and they obviously have levers they can pull to shorten the year. And more specifically, and this was brought up in the Monday Morning Quarterback, I think, column with Albert Breer, is that, or maybe it was Peter King, I don't know which one I read, but is the fact that, that they may actually have a situation where if one team has an outbreak or the two teams that are playing each other do, that game, that individual game might be rescheduled rather than just canceling the entire week of games. So maybe you, those two teams, if they had the same bye, would move to another week and you know, and play that. We saw that, you know, in case of the Hurricanes, where teams that had the same bye week, I think Miami and Tampa Bay did that when week one was canceled and mm-hmm. they moved it and played each other during the, what would have been their bye week. So, I think, you know, it's a unique year for everybody. I think the NFL is sort of prepared to shorten the season if they have to. They have weeks they can do that. They've, you know, have certain weeks where there's no interleague play. And so, you know, we'll just have to kind of wing it a little bit. I mean, you're going to have to figure out how you can be safe, what makes sense. You know, if you have an entire offensive line wiped out, you know, you don't, and you don't have five practice squad players available. Now, they've done things like expanded the practice squad. IR is sort of unlimited for recall. If you have players you want to bring back, even on the practice squad, there can be guys that have two or more years experience. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to try to replenish the troops, if you will. But I'm more confident that the NFL may start on time. I'm not confident they're going to go through the entire season without some of these issues where one team is disproportionately or one area infected and maybe games get rescheduled or postponed or something to that nature. And we'll see if they ever play or take it to a Super Bowl. But that's their goal, is to play and take it to some conclusion, you know, with the postseason and a Super Bowl. And I think they're committed to doing it, and I absolutely think that, that football will be the hardest of all the sports to prevent infection, only because, again, they're not in a bubble, and just the nature of that sport just requires so much contact and close contact that it may be hard to do. And then finally, we mentioned the other day that the Lightning are in Canada, and the good news is that Steven Stamkos, the Capitan, was a full participant in practice, so it looks like he's ready to go.
Well, yeah, he's not going to play in the exhibition game on Wednesday, but he is. He was a full participant in practice for the first time since Bolts camp, I guess. Everybody's got their own terms for whatever. But
2.0
since,
or
yeah,
whatever.
Since Bolts camp started, so that's a good sign. He will not play Wednesday. We'll see if he starts playing in the round robin starting on Monday when they face the Capitals at 4 o'clock. You know, John Cooper had said that he was, you know, wants to get him in at least one of the round robin games. Two would be great. Three would be even better. So we'll see what that leads to. But a full participate in practice is a very good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We're glad to see that. I'm ready for hockey, even if it's a
we got hockey.
We
got three games
Wednesday.
Today. Three exhibition today, games today, starting at 4 o'clock. It'll be games three today. I think there's six tomorrow exhibition games, and then three more on Thursday.
That's incredible, man. Just another sport to look forward to and to follow. So, let's get to your mailbag questions, and we've answered one. We got a few more. Let's do it.
Well, Craig asked, and it kind of dovetails on what we were just talking about. Now that Major League Baseball has failed, what will the NFL do? Should they push back till October? And why is no one blaming the leadership in Florida and the rest of the country on why this is such a mess now? Korea's had no issues in their league. America failed, but sports media won't accept that.
I don't know that sports media, you know, anytime you get into this political football, no pun intended, you get the hashtag stick to sports crowd, right? Like you're not supposed to have an opinion about, you know, how this country has tried to, you know, to battle COVID. It became political in many aspects. We're all aware of that. You know, look, there are certain states now in the Sun Belt. It started in New York. They've done a hell of a job, you know, bending the curve, reducing cases, whatever you want. And in the Sun Belt, that's not the case. It's not been the case in Florida or Texas or Arizona. And California now has had a record number of cases. So, you know, blame doesn't seem to change anything. I think the goal is to be as safe as possible, start the NFL season, monitor closely, you know, how those players do or how those teams do, especially in areas where there's a, you know, a big outbreak like Florida and other cities, and listen to the CDC and try to get the best recommendation with respect to playing with or without fans. That's still yet to be determined in many areas. So there's a lot here. I was watching an interview on CNN, as a matter of fact. Rich McKay was interviewed, among others, with the Atlanta Falcons, and they were talking to the NFL doctor, Dr. Sills or whatever. But, you know, like Rich said, he goes, look, you know, is it a mandatory business? Is it, you know, something like that? You know, it's important. And they're going to try to play, and there's no doubt they're going to attempt to play, and they're going to try to do it as safe as possible. And they have the benefit of still watching things that are happening now in baseball that will happen in the NBA or hockey or soccer. And, you know, they'll do the best they can. They have ways of trying to bring a season to its completion. Now, again, that doesn't mean 16 games. That doesn't mean that the Super Bowl is going to be played on February 7th. It can mean a lot of different things, but that's the goal, and they think they can do it, and they're going to try to do it because those other sports have tried and are actively involved in their seasons. So why not try? Why not see what the best practice is here? I just don't, you know, blame games and things like that with respect to sports. It's a business. It's a big business. There's millions and millions of dollars at stake. And look, as human beings, we like to feel some sense of normalcy. We like to look forward to things. I look forward just in these last couple days to knowing that the Rays were on television and, you know, you could watch a ball game. And that's the case probably if you're an MLS fan, and it's going to be the case soon if you're an NBA or an NHL fan. So, I mean, all those things are, you know, part of the American psyche, part of business. A lot of people's jobs, you know, are wrapped up in the business of sport. So there's a big economic impact there. And I don't know. I don't know what or whom they're expecting to condemn. Like I said, I mean, Kyle Brandt said something today. And I like Kyle Brandt a lot. He's one of the funniest guys on television, and a really smart guy. But, you know, I don't think anybody's rooting against anybody. I think we all want normalcy. We all want to live a productive, safe life. We all want our kids to go to school, for God's sakes. We just want to do it when it's right. We want to do it safely. You know, we don't want anybody else to get sick unnecessarily. You don't want teachers getting sick, you don't want athletes getting sick, and that's the thing that I think, you know, when people speak out about it, that's what they're talking about. And so there's a lot of individual responsibility here for these athletes, and just same way there is for newspaper reporters or radio producers or whatever, you know, anybody out there, doctors, nurses. I mean, we've all got to take care of each other. So let's see if they can pull this off. They in Korea, different society, different culture. You know, the mask came on very early. They've been prone to wear them before. And, there's a lot of countries that if we're not going to compare favorably to, period. There just is. I mean, you know, we are, you know, the hot spot of the world right now. So got a long way to go. But, I'm encouraged at least by, like we said, the number of tests in the NHL and how they've conducted themselves. Baseball was a bit of a wake-up call today. We'll see what the NFL does. There have been players already with the rookies. When the veterans start to report, there'll be more positive cases there too. And, you know, they're going to try to address it. And it's a next-man-up sport. And they've, you know, sort of structured things to have those players available. So let's see, but I'm not going to fall into the I don't typically, you know, get into politics anyway, because I don't think people come to this podcast for that. Obviously, it's a big part of life, but in this case, you know, condemnation of one side or the other. Let's just all do what we can do to try to be as safe as possible and protect others.
Michael asks, could Tampa lose the Super Bowl if the league feels it's not a safe host city?
Well, I think that'd be very difficult. That is such an enormous event. Can they? Yeah, I suppose they could. I mean, let's not say that the game itself, if it couldn't be played someplace with fans, without fans, how many? I mean, all that is such an unknown right now. I mean, tomorrow is unknown, right? So all I know is that, you know, Tampa has the Super Bowl because, you know, Los Angeles was building a stadium. They had some construction delays. And, you know, the NFL likes to see a full season played in a stadium before they host the Super Bowl. And that wouldn't be the case because this will be, a couple full seasons now they'd like to see. And this will be another one out there. And, of course, it's the Super Bowl is there next year. But I don't know if you can move that game. I think what they can do, though, is move the game later in the year. I think they can play it so long as they have some warning because, you know, hotels and restaurants and things like this can't hold, you know, large blocks of rooms on the hope that they're going to play a Super Bowl any given weekend in February. You can't block book a whole month of hotel rooms in the Tampa Bay area. So they'll have to kind of know how many weeks they would move that back. But you could eliminate bye weeks. You can do some things. You can play the game as late as March. I mean, the weather's not an issue. Obviously, here, even as you get later into February, if anything, it starts to get nicer when you get to the end of February. I fully expect, like, if you said, you know, hey, you got one bet here. Is the NFL gonna play the Super Bowl? Are they going to play this season to fruition? I would say yes. If you ask me if they're going to play 16 games and play a Super Bowl or play it on time, I would say probably not. There's probably going to be an interruption here somewhere or a shortening of games and perhaps a delay in when the Super Bowl is played. But to move that game from a community after the planning that's been involved and what it usually takes to put it on, if there's fans involved, it would be very problematic. And if there's not fans involved, why wouldn't you play it here anyway?
Well, I think there's a difference, too, between the game and then all the festivities around it. Mm-hmm. And that could all go away or not happen if they feel it's not safe. And if you're not going to have fans in the building anyway, you may not have all those fan events. And so, I think the game stays because I just don't think they're in a position. It's kind of hard to move that and whatever else unless they're already holding some other location we don't know about.
Yeah, but I mean, anything's possible.
But, you know, all the events surrounding the Super Bowl and the lead up for the week or two prior, I think all that stuff's probably on the table and could happen, may not, may change, may, you know, I don't think it goes elsewhere, but it may not happen as you're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with it totally. I think they'll play a game. And this has happened before where they watered down a number of parties, whether there was economic crisis and they seemed tone deaf or times of war and things like that with a more somber mood. So they've had to adjust some of those events in the past, but to postpone them, cancel them altogether, yeah, that's a different deal. And I would agree with you that that remains to be seen how much of that will occur.
All right, Les asks, Rick, what do you hear in regards to Buccaneer players possibly sitting out this year due to COVID? I know Smith has been vocal about maybe not playing. Anyone else that may have discussed it with the Bucs?
None that I'm aware of, although I think there's probably a number of players that are concerned. I don't think it's specific just to Donovan Smith, although, you know, look, again, and we sort of talked about this a little bit, there's a lot of guys that fall into the category of being able to opt out because of medical reasons or because they are vulnerable. And they're listed in that agreement that the NFL just made with its players. And we've talked about it. You know, if you are Black, Hispanic, Asian Pacific, you're in a high risk group. If you have diabetes, high risk group, or sleep apnea, or, you know, just a number of things that could compromise your immune system. Large body mass. Okay, hello. Got a bunch of 300-pound guys. So there's any number of reasons you could opt out. I think that the players are going to get an opportunity to come in for a short period of time before they reach an opt-out deadline and sort of try it out, look around, see what the safety protocols are, see if they still feel, unsafe. or they feel like they're putting their families at some kind of risk, and then they can determine whether they want to go forward or not. I think on a team that has, you know, it's going to have 53 players and probably about 14 practice squad guys, could you have an opt-out or two? Yeah, you could. I mean, we've seen it in baseball. We've seen it in less contact sports and in sports with guys that seem to be less, you know, less susceptible to virus and this sort of thing. So I do expect to see a couple. And, you know, the thing about it is football is as much as any professional sport, it's the most next man up sport there is. And so, you know, I can't compare, you know, a pandemic to a guy that has a sore thumb or elbow, but I knew players that were well established that wouldn't take a rep, not a rep off in practice, because they knew that if they let that other guy go in there, he may impress them and one day he'll be replacing them. And that's just the nature of football. So again, every player has to do what's right. Guys have different situations with who's at home, whether it's young infants like Donovan Smith or you know, who has a young daughter now, or maybe they live with older, you know, parents or relatives. I mean, who knows? So everybody has to make that decision. But it's a pretty big group of players and coaches, so I could definitely see more than just a player opting not to play this year.
All right, Harlan asked, what will next year's NFL draft look like if college football is severely impacted by COVID-19 and the long-term impact it may have on the NFL?
Wow, these are heavy questions. Next year's NFL draft, I think, will be held pretty much the way it is now. I think the impact will be on college football, not the NFL. Look, and this is something that college football will have to reconcile, is that if they're unable to play this fall and they want to move their season to the spring, your top players would be advised not to play. And I don't think they would play. There's too much money at stake. I don't think the NFL, you know, would move the draft back necessarily to accommodate a full, you know, college season. I mean, they could, but, you know, what for? They feel like that the best players will be available and they're going to take the best players. So that's an individual's decision that these guys will have to make at the university. So I don't see a change in the NFL, to be honest with you, in the draft. You know, could they move it back a month or two? I mean, maybe any of that's possible, but not necessarily to just accommodate guys that they know are going to be in the draft and they know are going to be, you know, fairly high draft picks. Those are going to be individual decisions that will hurt college football more than it'll hurt the NFL. And, you know, there's ramifications if guys, you know, don't come out and you get the backlog of players and that sort of thing. But nah, I mean, what slows the NFL train? I mean, I really haven't seen that occur. And there, I think, you know, by that time, we'll be into the spring. Hopefully a vaccine will have emerged and be taking place and in mass distribution. So, I mean, college football may or may not have to push their season back, but there's going to be a draft sometime, you know, in May, at least by May. And I don't think anything that college football does will change it.
All right, Kyle asks, with Blake Snell and Charlie Morton struggling a bit in their first games, I was wondering, when watching a starting pitcher warm up before the game, can you get any indication on how well they were performed that day? And if so, do the managers know this going into the game?
You know, it's a hard thing to gauge, because you'll hear guys say all the time, and just in the amount of baseball I've played, a lot of guys go out there and they don't have anything in the bullpen. They're like, yeah, my location stunk, I didn't feel good. And then they go out there on the mound and for some reason they kind of get clicked in and settled in and they throw great. And then there are other times where, you know, guys are like, well, I had a great bullpen. I felt, you know, I was throwing the ball well, I was locating it well, and I got out there on the mound, I couldn't control the strike zone. So it kind of goes both ways. I mean, I think you would, you know, more often than not, you want to be consistent. You know how to get loose. You know how to warm up. And you want to have a good bullpen, you know, before you get out there, because you only get 10 pitches and then the first batter's up. But, you know, most of these guys are creatures of habit. And, you know, they're going to be around the plate, whether they're throwing on the side or the hitters. But I don't know, Steve, you've been around baseball. I mean, I think it's hard. It's sort of like I equate it to this with football. I've had coaches say, we had the best week of practice we've ever had. And then they go out there and get absolutely annihilated. And then I've had coaches say, you know, we stunk in practice. And thank God that we played better in the game, because I'm telling you, we couldn't hit the broadside of a barn for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I don't know that there's any one way to really gauge that.
I know I've talked to pitchers before that have said, you know, I had nothing in the bullpen. I went out and threw a complete game shutout.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's just for some reason sometimes it clicks. You know, you watch a pitcher and, you know, he's rolling through three innings and then all of a sudden the fourth inning can't find a strike zone.
Yeah.
And it gives up a few runs in the fifth inning, they lock it down again. I mean, you know, it just
– right.
I don't think
all confidence.
I think there's some things you could probably tell in the bullpen is, you know, velocity maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you're throwing the fastball and it's 2 miles an hour slower than normal, maybe you don't have it that night.
Right. Maybe you're a little tired, or you have a tired arm, or
whatever it may be. I mean, you know, I think that may be a better indication than anything else in as far as warming up. But
there's guys that will have a great slider for a couple innings and it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the curveball's working for an inning. You know what I mean? I mean, it can be inning to inning, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it can be sometimes batter to batter, but definitely inning to inning.
Mm-hmm.
It's baseball. The hardest thing to do is, you know, is throw that ball where you want it and get batters out and then also hit it. I mean, that may be the hardest thing to do in sports consistently.
Take a round ball and hit it square, and a round bat and hit it square is what they want you to do. Square it up. Mm-hmm. So
when that ball's moving, there's more movement on the balls now than ever before. I mean, I mean, look at the Rays pitchers. I mean, you want to talk about how you build a pitching staff? Is you find a bunch of pitchers who everybody's pitch moves a different direction. Try facing that every game when you rarely are going to see a pitcher twice in a game too when you face the Rays.
Yeah. They are a handful. And they were a handful against the Braves, let me tell you. Those guys were pretty frustrated. But you're right. They come at you from different angles, different speeds, different pitches that are moving all over this wicked. And I don't know how anybody hits it in the big leagues. But, yeah, I the bullpen, I just think it's one of those things that's hard to predict sometimes, you know?
Jeffrey asked about the home team or the crowd noise at the games as he's watching the Rays games. He wants to know what you think of it. Do you like it? He does not like it. And he has a suggestion for extra innings. Instead of starting a guy on second base, either you have eight guys in the field or you give them four outs instead.
Wow. The four outs doesn't guarantee you even get a base runner, though. That's the problem.
Well, but what it avoids, and he said, is it avoids one dinky hit getting a win.
Yeah, but I think that's the intention.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, sure. I think the intention is to end the game right there. Yeah. You know, you don't want to play a 10th inning. You want to say, well, both teams are going to get a guy at second base. They can move him down, move him in, get him over, get him in, whatever. But we're going to give them both a great opportunity with nobody out and a man on second in the scoring position. One hit, one error, anything scores that run. That's the intent. I kind of get it. Like I said, we talked about it the other night. I think it's very interesting, and I think it works well. As far as eight guys in the field and how you would position them, I mean,
well, the Rays have been experimenting with two outfielders. So.
Yeah, I mean, these days, when you think about it, they leave the entire side of infields open, right? So in essence, that really wouldn't change a whole lot with the shifts that they play to begin with. You could easily play with eight players if you wanted to. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo this guy's, you know, sort of notions. I think it works. I think it's going to be fun to watch going forward. I don't know that there needs to be a better, you know, sort of overtime or extra inning system.
Yep.
Do you? I mean,
I there may be a better way, but I like the runner on second. I think it creates excitement. It creates urgency.
Yeah.
You know, the pitcher's got to go out there and throw good pitches right away.
Yeah.
You're not just, you know, okay, I walked a guy or, you know, give up a single. I mean, you've got to pitch right away because that single could lead to a run. I mean, that game can not be tied in a hurry without a home run. I mean, you know, home run can always do that. And his other part was the crowd noise, and I like it personally.
Well, I do too.
I think all the televisions, all the games I've seen from soccer to baseball, I like what they've done. It's It makes it feel, particularly if you're casually watching it, mm-hmm. it feels like it's normal.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know, I suppose, you know, if you're sitting there hanging on every pitch or, you know, every kick of the soccer ball and you're noticing there's a lot of crowd noise and there's not one person in the stands, you know, it's kind of noticeable in that regards. But, you know, just to casually watch a game or to have it on and that, it feels normal. And I know hockey's going to do the same thing when it starts up this week. You're going to notice that on the broadcast as well. They're all doing it. So
I would also say this. I was there one day when they were playing an inter-squad game with no noise at all. Mm-hmm. And until you see a game where there's no sound except the sound of their own voices, that's when it becomes weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, not all the leagues are putting it in the venue like baseball is.
Right.
So like hockey's doing it on the broadcast.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, so the players are still getting it, the silent treatment, so to speak.
Yeah, they're still seeing the eeriness of it all, and they can hear each other and all that stuff. I understand that. But from a spectator standpoint, I mean, I like the soundtrack of baseball. I like mm-hmm. the soundtrack of, you know, what comes across my TV. I'm not really actively thinking. I see the empty seats, but I'm not actively thinking that, you know, this is piped in white noise and stuff like that. And they're getting better and better with the response. You know, whoever's producing the crowd noise is getting better with the appropriate response to the play. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's worked well. And I know for the players in the game at the stadiums like the Rays are doing, I know they prefer it. They like, you know, we like the walk-up songs. We like the organ. We like all of it, you know.
I think particularly baseball, that would be more important, I think, than any other sport. And mm-hmm. the reason I say that is because there's more downtime.
Yes.
Baseball's not a sport where there's a lot of action.
Yes.
I mean, you can go a long time between balls in play the way strikeouts come anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, hockey or basketball, you're still up and down the court or the sheet of ice. And soccer, you're running around. You know, there's not this long stops of, okay, here's a pitch. Okay, 20 to 30 seconds. Here's another pitch. Oh, nothing.
Foul ball.
Another 30 pitch. Oh, 30 seconds. Oh, no, that's a ball. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a lot of time of just standing around, and that silence would probably be pretty weird.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's just a different game, and it was so different and so much better with the crowd noise, however it came across, whether you're watching on TV or being, you know, when I was there in person, and I can see what the players, what they felt, and they all, to a man, they all said, oh, yeah, no, we really appreciated it. We really, you know, wanted that that sound, you know, a little bit of normalcy for us. And between innings, it's dead silent and it's weird. And it's, like you said, in stadium, they all have to deal with that. But, you know, like when I watched the other night, you know, Kevin Kiermaier get the hit, the only ones that were screaming and yelling, going crazy were the guys on the bench. And yet, you know, it seemed completely normal. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of it as no fans being there because they, of course, would have gone nuts. But they had plenty of crowd noise when he got the hit in the second run scored the winning run. And so, you know, I just watched the guys celebrate and dump water over each other and scream and yell like they would. And, you know, it looked like a walk-off baseball game, which it was. And so I'm all in on the crowd noise. I don't think it's hokey in the least. I don't think the athletes dislike it. I think it's here to stay for as long as there's not fans there.
All right, we'll end on this question, and Randy had emailed you at rstroud@tampabay.com. He says, I noted while watching the Rays opening series, the club has extended the view obstructing netting down into the bullpens. This effectively leaves only the outfield and maybe the corner seats with unobstructed views of the field if the upper deck remains closed. I wonder if you guys think the Rays should consider maybe opening up just section 300 in the upper deck so fans could have some seats available behind home plate without looking over the netting and with clear sight lines to the field.
Well, I always liked the upper deck. I always liked the 300 level. That's where I like to sit, was behind home plate. I understand why they tarped them. They wanted to make a more intimate setting and also eliminate the vendors up there as well. That all made sense, you know, from a business standpoint, perhaps, with Stu Sternberg. If they get, you know, fans back into the ballpark, maybe that's a way to go, you know, to try to keep them distanced from each other and from the field, obviously. I don't know that it's going to happen. As far as the netting, I don't know if that netting's up for any reason other than they don't have to worry about fan obstruction. You know, they may have extended it to protect players.
Yeah, all the teams were doing it this year pretty much going in. So we just never saw the regular season start back in April.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen what foul balls have done to people, right? Mm-hmm. There's been some serious, you know, injuries and things. So I think baseball needed to address that. And obstructive, I mean, I guess it is. You know, years ago, the entire grandstand was, you know, was netted. So, you know, it's just like anything else. You got to adapt and move on. But as far as, you know, look, as soon as they can have fans, they got to figure out a way to get them in there safe, get them in there separated, however they do it. But I was always a big fan of the 300 level, man, not just because of the expense, but just because I like watching a game from behind home plate. And I can't sit in the dugout club or whatever they call that thing. I don't have that kind of. But I do like not having to turn my head to watch a baseball game. I like seeing what the catcher and the umpire see, and everything's in front of you. And to me, those, you know, even, and it's 300 level, but it doesn't seem that high to me. I still feel like I'm not that far from the field. So to me, it's comfortable. I always enjoyed it. All right, thanks for your mailbag questions. Those are really some good ones and deep and philosophical. I apologize for rambling if I did, but we always appreciate you guys sending us your questions. You don't have to wait for a mailbag to do that. And we'd like to know what you think of this podcast, what you like, what you don't like, and you can hit us up anytime on Twitter at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter at NFLStroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. And tomorrow, we're going to have the great Tom Jones, a former longtime columnist of the Tampa Bay Times, now with the Poynter Institute, my former radio partner as well. So that'll be a lot of fun to kick it with Tom about all these topics. And we got the Rays. We'll be playing again against Atlanta. You've got hockey on the horizon. I mean, this is the, you know, become an all-in sort of time of year for sports, right?
Yeah, the NBA and hockey get started for real this weekend. So
it's phenomenal. I love it. I love being able to plan my afternoons, my evenings, and boy, we got sports to talk about on the podcast, so what could be better for that? So for Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.